with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role. www.d20radio.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Knowledge Check, a D&D 5th edition discussion podcast. I'm Philip, and I'm on my own tonight. Eric's under the weather, and we wanted to get something published since we hadn't been able to record one for the week of Christmas. We took that week off, but we wanted to go ahead and get something up this week just so that you have something from us and didn't wonder if we'd disappeared. So first off, the obligatory social media plug to do Eric's job. You can find us pretty much everywhere on the net at The Geek Pantheon. We have a website, thegeekpantheon.com. We have a Facebook group. We have a Twitter, an Instagram, a Google Plus, and a Gmail account, all of them at The Geek Pantheon. So if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to join the discussion, our Facebook group is fairly active with discussion, so we'd really encourage you to come and join the discussion there about this and our other podcasts. This week, I'm going to do something a little bit different. I am not going to talk about D&D 5th edition. Now, why on a D&D 5th edition discussion podcast would I not talk about D&D 5th edition? Well, very simply, it's because Eric's not here, so I can do whatever I want to, as one does when the boss is away. And since Eric's my best friend, I think it's very unlikely that I'll get fired for it. So, you know, doing what I want. Anyway, the real reason is that 5th edition D&D tells stories very well. But it tells a particular kind of story very well. It tells a high fantasy sword and sorcery story very well. It tells a low magic fantasy story pretty well. But beyond that, you have to make some pretty substantial changes for this game to work really well. There are, you know, modern and sci-fi hacks out there, but there's some aspects of that that D&D just wasn't designed to handle. If you've been doing RPGs for a while, at some point you're going to want, I think, to try a different kind of story. Maybe not. Maybe that's just me, but I don't think so. So if you want to try a different kind of story, if you want to try something that's not a sword and sorcery fantasy story, what do you do? Well, you can hack D&D. It is fairly, the math of it is fairly clear. And so it's not extremely hard to adapt D&D to work in other systems or to work in other settings. But that can be a fairly time-consuming process, and you need to know the rules for D&D really well before you can do that. So what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to recommend some other games to you. If you want to tell a different kind of story at your table, if you and your friends want a different kind of story, or one of your other friends has had a story that he's wanted to tell for a while, but it just doesn't feel quite right for 5th edition, I'm going to recommend some games that will tell different kinds of stories for you. So I have four RPGs that I think you should try out, because if you're only telling one kind of story, then you're missing out on a lot of different opportunities. And one of the things that I have found is that from playing other settings, other systems, my D&D game and my D&D skills as a dungeon master have gotten better. I have borrowed mechanics from other games. I've borrowed even just concepts from other games and added them to 5th edition D&D, and it makes my games better. So I really encourage you to try out at least one of these games. So I'm going to recommend some games for you. I've got four RPG rule systems that I want to recommend for you, and then tell you a little bit about them, what my experience with them is, and why I think you should try them, and also what kind of story are they really good at. So the first, and probably the most popular on the D20 Radio Network, which we are proud to be a part of, is Fantasy Flight's Narrative Dice System. Now this comes in right now two popular varieties. There's the very well-known and very successful Star Wars role-playing game, which uses the narrative dice system. And then recently published is Genesis, which is the setting-neutral version of those rules. It has some changes, some updates, and some advice on how to play in different settings. But basically, at its core, it's the same. So the reason, well, first of all, my experience with this system is mostly in the Star Wars setting. I own Genesis. I have read the book, but I haven't had time to play yet, or haven't had the opportunity to play yet. But I have played quite a bit of the Star Wars variety. So this game is really cool if you like high action. I think it's a great game for high, fast-paced action. I think it's a great game for pulp. It's not on the surface. I'm sure you can make it more deadly, but it's not on the surface a very deadly game on the player side. And so it's great for pulp. And it's also really good if you, as the game master, like the idea of letting go a little bit and letting chance and your players tell some of the story. So I'm going to very, very briefly tell you what's cool about this game. The cool thing about this game is all in the dice. As the name suggests, the narrative dice system uses special dice. So if you're like me and you like buying dice, then that's a plus right off the bat. If you don't like having to buy other accessories, then that might be a downside. Although you can use regular polyhedral dice, it's difficult. But it uses special dice, which you can buy at my game store. They were $14.99, which is kind of high for a set of dice, but they are specially made dice. These dice have various symbols on them, which you get to interpret. You learn very quickly how to interpret them. It looks intimidating at first, but it takes very little time to learn them. And they represent basically three things. Success or failure, boosts or setbacks, and triumphs and despairs. So success and failure obviously just determine whether or not you succeeded and to what degree did you succeed. Did you end up with a net of three successes, a net of two failures, a wash, or just one success, meaning you very, very simply slipped by. But the interesting part is when you get to the other symbols, the boosts and setbacks and triumphs and despairs all tell you what else happened. Not only did you shoot the stormtrooper, but with those advantages, the blaster bolt you fired ricocheted off of his helmet and hit the control panel of the door behind him, cutting off his squad from reinforcing and giving you time to escape. So these dice then get interpreted and become a part of a discussion between the players and the GM on what else happens. So this is a really cool system for letting chance and the players tell a good deal of the story, which is really fun. Eric ran some games in this setting for me and some other players, and the sheer unpredictability of it made it very fun. You had no idea what was going to happen. Eric sat down with probably a plan, but the dice really do take control very quickly. This is true in any role-playing game that uses dice, but very, very much more in this system. So what kind of story do I think this tells well? I think it mainly tells a high action, a pulp story very well. Genesis is designed to tell lots of stories. You can tell a superhero story with Genesis. You can tell a fantasy story with Genesis. You can tell a realistic, hard science fiction story with Genesis, or an intrigue story, or a spy story. You can really do anything with this dice system because at its core, it's just a conflict resolution system. But I think the tone that this system implies is one of high action. And you would need to very, very deliberately adjust that tone to do other settings. That's very doable, and the Genesis book is really good in that it gives you a lot of advice on how to do that, including some additional rules that you can tag on for a new setting. But the most natural thing is something on the same tone level as Star Wars, something very action, very upbeat, up-tempo, a lot of pulp involved there. So a lot of things you can do, but I think that's the kind of story it tells most naturally. But as a setting, if Genesis, in any case, as a setting neutral system, is extremely versatile. You can tell a lot of good stories with it. So I'd highly recommend that if you get the opportunity to play that, to do so. If you are coming to Gamer Nation Con, I'm confident there will be a lot of opportunities to play Genesis. I'm looking forward to getting to dive into it, as I don't currently see an opportunity before that, but I'm really looking forward to that about Gamer Nation Con, of getting to actually road test it. So Genesis, try out Genesis, or if you just like Star Wars, there's already a ready-built system using the same dice system in the Fantasy Flight Star Wars game. Wholeheartedly recommend that. It's really fun. The character creation is deep. The dice, as I've said, are a lot of fun. And from my reading, I haven't done this, but from my reading, it seems fairly easy to step into the GM seat for that system as well. So Fantasy Flight's narrative dice system is a lot of fun. It does speed, I think, mainly better than Dungeons & Dragons. It's also a little more versatile in what you can do with a character. Now, that means that character creation, or at least character progression, involves a lot more choices. And if you get overwhelmed with choice, that can be a problem. But if you like having a lot of choice, if you like being able to play with the numbers and tweak and mess around and see if you can build just precisely the character you want, then this will really do that. Genesis has a magic system, which is very different from the force powers system from the Star Wars game. So if you're used to that and you get into Genesis, the magic system is going to be very different, but it's good. It allows for you to decide what the trappings of your power are. So you have a basic effect that your power creates, and you get to add the trappings. And you can add, meaning, is this blast you're going to do fire, ice, darkness, necrotic energy, something like that? What is it? You get to decide that. It's just a single power. So rather than having flame bolt, ray of frost, eldritch blast, you just have one power that you then get to mess with the trappings of. There's a little more to it than that, and they've given you a list of spells, but all the spells are intentionally left basic in their description, so that you can decide what your magic looks like, which of course you can do in any game, but 5th edition provides you with a description of what each spell looks like. Genesis tells you what each spell does and leaves it pretty much up to you what it looks like. There's also a fun element with their magic system if you're trying to do fantasy with Genesis, that, or anything that would involve magic, not necessarily just fantasy, I guess, but there's also a fun system in which you can up the difficulty of the magic check you are making in order to add additional effects to, you know, anchor people to the ground, that sort of thing. Make it a big burst, so turn your flame bolt into a fireball, so to speak. So that's pretty cool. I haven't gotten to see it in action, as I said, but from reading it, it seems very effective and very, very versatile. And so that's a great thing there. And it's going to do speed, as I said, a lot better than I think 5th edition does. And so if that's a real big concern for you, I would recommend checking out Genesis or the Fantasy Flight Star Wars game. Next up, Savage Worlds. I've talked about this one before, way back in our first episode when we talked about our experience. I know I mentioned this one. Savage Worlds is also setting neutral and relies on the use of polyhedral dice of the normal variety. You need every kind of die you need in D20 or in D&D, except for the D20, which doesn't come up much. This one's very, very simple because it's mathless. So also is the Fantasy Flight system. There's very little adding to do. Mostly the more skilled you are, the bigger a die you roll, and you're just trying to beat 4 in most things. That's the basic measure of success. And then as things get harder, something gets subtracted from your roll or added to the difficulty. But basically, you're trying to beat 4. And if you're more skilled, you get to roll a bigger die. Therefore, you have a better chance of beating 4. Savage Worlds is also intended for high action because they have something called exploding dice. The dice, if you roll the max, you roll again and you add. And so the bigger number, the greater degree of success will have additional effects. This tells a fast-paced story, but I have seen this done with intrigue. But in a James Bond kind of way, right? You can tell a spy story with this, but you're going to be James Bond. So there's going to be all sorts of crazy things going on, gadgets and crazy escapes, and you're going to do things that you shouldn't be able to pull off. So you could do James Bond, Mission Impossible, Jason Bourne, that kind of spy story with this very well. It was initially designed, the initial setting for this was a Wild West setting that included weird magic elements and zombies and that kind of thing. And it tells that very well. It has really solid rules for the use of firearms. So if you're looking to get into a game that's going to use Old West or modern firearms, Savage Worlds handles that really well. And I think really simply without, you know, realistically without, or well, not realistically, but effectively without becoming overcomplicated, which is a real danger. And that's one of the things that I think is difficult about bringing D&D into the modern era is if you're going to do something with firearms, I don't feel like I've seen a good execution of that in D&D. So that's something Savage Worlds handles much, much better. I've been playing in a science fiction game of Savage Worlds for quite a long time, and it's a whole lot of fun. The space rules work. It works really well for space. It works really well for the combat. It works really well for ship fighting and that sort of thing. The Fantasy Flight game also works very well for sci-fi, but this is more of a hard sci-fi, and it works very well for that. The other thing that's cool is that it's entirely classless. It's just a point-based system. You decide what you buy skills. You can buy superpowers. You can buy attribute improvements, all of them with the same basic point structure. And the very cool thing is you earn experience in 2 to 3 points per session usually. And every 5 experience points, you get to upgrade something about your character. So you get to tweak your character very frequently, usually every 2 to 3 sessions. And that's a whole lot of fun to me. I love being able to go back and tweak my character a little bit. This is the one thing that D&D doesn't give me is that usually you go a good deal of time between leveling up, which is fine. It makes perfect sense the way that D&D handles character progression. But I love tweaking my character. And so getting to do that more often in Savage Worlds, just like you do in Fantasy Flight's narrative dice system, is a significant bonus to me. The other thing is that you can literally build any kind of character, and that includes any race of character. There are very simple rules for how to create your own race. So if you are playing in a crazy sci-fi setting and you know you're doing the Star Trek thing where there's basically infinite species out there, or for that matter the Star Wars thing, and you want to create your own species, your own alien race that you're going to play, it's very easy to do it. There's rules that will prevent it from getting unbalanced, and so with a little discussion with your GM, it's very straightforward. I had a miniature for this game that I wanted to use. And this miniature was from the Infinity War game, and it was of a big humanoid canine, just huge. I mean, probably 8 feet tall, wielding a enormous sword and a big pistol. And I decided I wanted to play that guy. And so me and the GM talked about what was okay for that race of the listed racial abilities in the rule book, and we built that race. It took maybe 15 minutes. It was very straightforward, worked really well. So you can build any race you want without any difficulty, much more easily than in D&D or another D20 system, I would argue. And make them interesting. I mean, it's fairly straightforward to put together a race package in 5th edition, but you get to add a lot more interest, I think, with this. The other really great thing, and the thing that's going to recommend it above any other RPG system that I'm going to discuss tonight, is its price. The price point for entry in Savage Worlds is very inexpensive. The books are also very compact. They're not well indexed, which is a common problem I found with RPG books, but they are very compact and very easy to carry around. They don't weigh a ton, which is a real problem if you're carrying your D&D books around everywhere. But they're also very inexpensive. I think you can get the core rule book for like $20 at a game store, presumably much, much cheaper on Amazon. Or I would expect you could get it cheaper on Amazon or find it used for that matter at a lot of used bookstores that I've come across. This is a lot of fun to me because it means that it's much easier for me to justify buying more of the books as they come out. There's a base set of books that Savage Worlds puts out. They have a core book, and then they have a setting companion, a sci-fi companion, a superheroes companion, a fantasy companion, horror companion, etc. And then also it's very, very open to third-party publishers publishing settings for it. They were doing this pretty much since they've been around, very, I guess, similar to Dungeons and Dragons did with the Open Game License and now with the DMs Guild. The Savage Worlds books also tend to be fairly inexpensive, the setting books, and there's a lot of really fun settings. There's almost any setting that you could think of you can find in Savage Worlds. It's a lot of fun. It's pretty inexpensive to get into. The rules are probably about as complex as Dungeons and Dragons, not really more or less. Character creation is, I think, simpler. At least it's simpler, I think, to understand the consequences of the choices that you're making. I think for a new D&D player, the meaning behind the class that you pick can sometimes not be entirely clear. And so it can sometimes be hard to make the choice and know what that choice means. Whereas in Savage Worlds, the things you do to your character at the beginning of the game are very straightforward and you know what they mean. And I think that's a big plus, making it very easy for new gamers to jump into. So Savage Worlds, another good recommendation. The third recommendation I have for you is very different in that it's a very, very setting specific game. This is The One Ring by Cubicle 7. The One Ring is, as the name implies, set in J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle Earth. I've been playing this for about 3 years now, and I really love it. I mean, I love Middle Earth, like, just to an excessive degree. I'm a teacher at a private school, and last year I convinced them to create an elective on Tolkien. And so I love Middle Earth. I love Tolkien's work. And so this is a setting that really obviously appeals to me. But this is a really, really good system because it captures that feel of Tolkien's Middle Earth. It doesn't take you into places where you cannot play a wizard in this game. You cannot play a wizard. The wizards are more than just people who know magic in Tolkien. And so you can't play one. You can play an elf. You can play a dwarf. You can play a hobbit. You can play a human. And the groups, instead of races, you have cultures, which I think is a really good system. The character creation is pretty simple. The skills mechanic and the weapon mechanic are all the same. Basically, you get to roll an increasing number of dice as your skills improve. And so it's also very low math. You're basically just adding up the dice you roll. And so there's no modifiers to apply in most cases. It has a really good corruption system, which is obviously an important part of Tolkien's Middle Earth. So you gain shadow and you spend hope. And so inevitably, as a character progresses, and I think this is the really unique thing for me, as a character progresses, inevitably their available hope and their decreases and their shadow increases. And that means that inevitably, eventually, if you keep adventuring, you will fall to the shadow. You just will. You will lose hope, you'll lose heart, and you will fall to the shadow. You'll suffer bouts of madness, you'll perhaps go mad and die. If you go far enough to the shadow, you will lose control of your character, and your character will either become a villain, become evil, or simply flee into the wilds and become a mad hermit. Living in his own misery. And so it is a game that encourages you to think about your character as a real person and to not just stick with them, to retire them. It eventually becomes you eventually are going to be forced to, unless you're playing, unless you're metagaming a lot. So it's a game that encourages you to change characters often. And I like that because it means that your characters, your old characters, become NPCs in this world. There's a system for giving your character an heir so that you could do generational play. You could play the children of your previous character, and on, which is another important thing in theme in Tolkien's Middle Earth. We see a lot of people whose lineages are vital to their drive. Frodo, you know, obviously inherits the quest from Bilbo and that sort of thing. Just a lot of fun thematically. The combat system is fine. It's not outstanding. It's not going for realism. It's abstracting very dangerous combat. It's a very dangerous game. It's very easy for a character to end up killed, which again is true to Tolkien. It is a hard world. You live in a world where people are swinging real sharp objects at you, and if one hits you right, you die. You're in a world where there are trolls and giant wolves that are super intelligent and all sorts of things that can just kill you. And terrible things that you can't even begin to fight. This is not a game where you get to face down and kill the Witch King or Dark Lord Sauron or a Balrog or anything like that. Those are beyond you. You're not the great hero of Middle-earth. You are a hero of Middle-earth, and you're going to probably be a hero to the people who live in your local surroundings. That, I think, is a really appealing thing to me. I like that about Middle-earth because one of Tolkien's big themes is regular people stepping up. You know, there's nothing particularly outstanding or heroic about Frodo, except that he steps up and he does the thing that's necessary. So that's, I think, the theme, and the encouragement for excellent role-playing is a lot of what appeals to me about The One Ring. Now, if you really like 5th edition mechanics, but the idea of that setting and some of those concepts like hope and shadow appeals, Cubicle 7 did recently begin releasing the books for The One Ring adapted to the 5th edition as Adventures in Middle-earth. And so if you don't feel like learning a new system, but you kind of want to try something with those themes, then pick up Adventures of Middle-earth, and the rules will be familiar, but adapted to the new setting and the new tone. So if you like that idea but don't want to change systems, Adventures of Middle-earth might be a good compromise. Or I suppose if you don't think you could convince your gaming group to want a new system. The books are not cheap. They're probably comparable to D&D. The core rule book is fairly thick and is technically all you need to play, like in most things. The supplements that they have introduce new regions. The core rule book deals with Wilderland, the area between the Misty Mountains and the Lonely Mountain. So basically the area where the main action of The Hobbit takes place in the years after The Hobbit, but before Lord of the Rings. You could adjust that, but that's what the base setting is. The other books that they've released have given new regions. They've got a book on Rohan, a book on the area around Bree. So the extra source books are not necessary until you want, well, they're not even necessary if you want to play in that region. They've also introduced new heroic cultures like the Rohirrim, the Men of Bree, the Rangers of the North, various elf groups. So if you want to buy everything, it's somewhat expensive, but they are available in PDF, and that cuts the cost substantially. So if you just want the PDFs, you can get those on DriveThruRPG. But it's a great game done by a little company. Fourth and last recommendation is 7th Sea. Now, this is the one I have the least experience with. I got this for Christmas. I've been reading through it, and I highly recommend it. It's in its second edition. This is a game by a creator named John Wick. Who presumably his life story is the basis of the Keanu Reeves movie, I guess. And this is a swashbuckling game of adventure in a world that's sort of a fantasy Europe, but fantasy in the sense of like Errol Flynn movies and the Three Musketeers and Zorro and all of that stuff. So in this game, you're playing that kind of hero. You're playing Zorro, you're Inigo Montoya, you're the Man in Black, you're Jack Sparrow. This is a game that's a lot of fun in its speed. I've watched some play of this. I've read the book. I haven't gotten to try it out, but the speed of it is very appealing. You roll a bunch of D10s according to the skill level you have and your attribute level. And then you just make sets of 10. And each set of 10 lets you succeed at something. That's what I think is really cool. It just lets you succeed at something based on that. Of course, the villains also have things to spend to make trouble for you. There's rules for magic. There's rules for dueling. And the best rules for dueling that I think are out there. Dueling, I'm a fencer. I fence and teach fencing at my school. And so I'm very critical of any attempt to do dueling in an RPG setting, because they very rarely get it right. This does a very, very good job. It's not obviously shooting for super realism, because that would not be in the spirit of the Three Musketeers and Zorro and the Scarlet Pimpernel. But it does a very, very good job of it. The other cool thing about this system is that you get to decide how you're using a skill. So one of the things that I think often frustrates players of other RPG systems is the pairings that skills come with, the way they're paired with attributes. So for example, athletics in D&D ties to your strength. That makes a good deal of sense, but there's a lot of things about being athletic that involve dexterity or intelligence or constitution. There's a lot of things about acrobatics that I could make a strong argument for involve your wisdom, your ability to sense the surroundings. And while for the most part, the skills and the attribute pairings in D&D make perfect sense, there are places where you can see it would make a lot of sense that they could pair with another attribute. Well, in 7th C, you get to do that. When a scene begins, so if you're going to try and if you're going to try to convince the bandits to run away, you get to decide on your approach. And that is where you take one of your attributes, so wits, brawn, agility, panache, and you pair it with a skill, persuasion, intimidation, weaponry, athletics. And so you could say, I'm going to try to persuade them, and I'm going to do it with my panache. And what you mean there is you're going to try and persuade them by demonstrating that you're their best friend in the world. You have their best interests at heart. Another person might say, I'm going to persuade them, but I'm going to use my wits. You're trying to apply logic to this situation. And so you set up your approach, your character's approach, from the beginning, and then you spend your sets of 10, your raises, in order to succeed on things inside your approach. You also have hero points that you can spend to roll extra dice or to allow your player, your friends to roll extra dice, or to introduce a narrative fact to the story. This is a lot like another thing with the Fantasy Flight game. You have fate points in that you can turn in, and these allow you to do the same thing. Essentially, you can upgrade a role or introduce a narrative element to the game. And the hero points in 7th C do the same thing. You get more out of it, which I think is interesting, if you spend it to help someone else. If you spend it and describe how you're helping someone else succeed at what they're doing, they get to roll 3 more dice to make sets with, whereas if you spend it on yourself, you only get to roll 1 more die. So it encourages teamwork to a significant degree. The other thing I like about it is that it very, very blatantly tells you that this is a story about big heroes. Your characters are not as level 1 D&D characters are, just a little bit better than the average village guard, which I think is the generally intended thing with D&D. You're a little bit better. You're starting out. In 7th C, you are not. You are already outstanding. I watched a live play of this with John Wick on Geek and Sundry, and he said that what you're able to do when you start out is that scene in The Princess Bride where Inigo Montoya, without taking his eyes off of Count Rugen, kills all four of his guards in just a flurry of moves. That's what you are already at. So if you want to immediately jump in, be the big hero, play that kind of guy, then this is a game that will allow you to do that. It's also extremely fast to build a character. You have points that you spend on your attributes, then you have points that you spend on your skills, then you have points that you spend buying advantages, which are kind of like feats, but a little different. You have a background that gives you some skills. So a lot of, you know, the familiar RPG things, but very, very quick to do. And the character sheet is very simple. All of the things rely on the same system of rolling D10s and applying and making sets of 10, which you then spend to succeed. So I think this tells the high action swashbuckling game story better than D&D. Now, I will say, if you like detail-oriented combat, if you like crunchy combat, you know, where there's going to be lots of turns and the bad guy's going to get lots of opportunities, this is not that kind of game. This is a very, very abstract combat game. The only time that combat gets gritty is in the dueling system, because obviously a duel should be a cinematic duel should be that. But this is intended to be cinematic combat. So things happen very quickly. You get to describe them. There's no, as long as you're within reason and staying within your approach, there's no real saying no. So, for example, if you are boarding another ship and you come upon the captain and you want to spend a raise to grab some sailcloth, throw it over his head and tackle him to the ground, you can just do that. If you're trying to do something really big, the GM might reasonably ask you to spend more than one raise, but you can do it. So it's high action. The heroes are really outstanding, and it's very, very hard to die. Now the GM has danger points to spend. And so he can counteract things that the heroes do, and cause them damage. And so the villains are not helpless, but this is not a game where you're going to have lots where you have to deal with things like armor class or hit points, or anything like that. The closest thing to hit points you have is that heroes have a wound tracker, and most of the wounds that they get are irrelevant, but along the tracker, there are special spaces that you fill in that are dramatic wounds, and these add effects to your character, and they're things that, you know, affect your character in a big way. A dramatic wound is, you know, Inigo Montoya's scars on his cheeks, or Luke Skywalker losing his hand. I think this could be a system that you could break out of its setting and apply it to other things, but it's not nearly as versatile as Savage Worlds or Genesis. It might not even be quite as versatile as Dungeons & Dragons. I'm not sure. I'd have to try some things, and I haven't had a chance to. I want to run this game. I have a game I've been wanting to run for a long time that's based on a novel called Sharps, where a group of fencers are sent into a country where they were just at war with on a diplomatic tour, where they're going to hold a bunch of fencing competitions with the local champions. And of course, everything starts to go wrong. There's a bunch of intrigue, a whole bunch of different hidden agendas, but a lot of sword fighting and a lot of not really knowing who's on your side. And I think 7th Sea would work really well for that game. And I really want to try that. Maybe I'll try to build it and bring it to Gamer Nation Con or something like that, and we can try it out there if you're going. But I think 7th Sea has a lot of great potential. Haven't gotten to play it a lot, but if you're looking for something new, this is also one that you can get in PDF on DriveThruRPG, or obviously in game stores or on Amazon. But there are a number of books already out for the second edition, other than the core rulebook. There's source books on the different nations are the main thing. And then I think there's a book of heroes and villains, pre-built heroes and villains that you can just pull right out and use in your campaign. So this is another one where the players have a lot of opportunities to declare that things are simply true. For example, in the live play I watched run by John Wick, one of his players, they were at a party, and one of his players just declared that the villain was at the party. So that would obviously, if you're a detail-oriented, long-term planning GM, which I kind of am, though I try to be less so, that would obviously throw a pretty big wrench into whatever grand scheme you have. So this is definitely a game where the storytelling is very collaborative, and where the GM could pretty easily go in with very little planning. And that appeals to a certain degree. So Seventh Sea by John Wick, highly recommend you try it out. So, you know, if you're looking for a gaming resolution for 2018, I would encourage you to try something new. Try out a new system, a system you haven't played before, maybe even a system that's wildly different from what you're used to. If you're used to rules-heavy games like Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, try something rules-light like Fate or Seventh Sea's kind of rules-light, I think, at least compared to those games. Try something very different. Try a game aimed at kids. Try a game in a different kind of setting. Do something new. I would encourage you to do that. Try playing with strangers if you've never done. Go to your local game shop and join a game. I'm speaking as much to myself as anyone else. I'm very uncomfortable playing with strangers. I'm fairly introverted. But, you know, it's a new experience. So I'd encourage you to find some opportunities to get some new gaming experiences in. Anyway, those are my recommendations for some four games other than D&D that you should try out. So I hope that was interesting to you. If it wasn't, I'm sorry. Eric and I will hopefully be back together in our next episode and talking about 5th edition, since that is, after all, largely the point of this podcast. So hope you've enjoyed this. Sorry for not having Eric. I know that he, you know, brings a very unique level of pizzazz to the podcast. And without him, it's just, you know, it's just me. What can you do? Anyway, we certainly hope Eric will be feeling better quickly, very quickly, since we're supposed to record some Eberron Renewed today, on the day that this will release. The second, we should be recording a new session of Eberron Renewed. So, yeah, that's all. And thanks so much for your support. We're almost a year into this thing with the knowledge check and Eberron Renewed, and the level of response to it has really surprised me and very much impressed me. I was really expecting this to go kind of nowhere, to be honest. Sorry, Eric. I really thought we'd get a few sessions in and I'd get to play some D&D, but that no one was really going to listen to this. So I'm very surprised and gratified that you've been listening. I'm glad that you've enjoyed it. The response to both this channel and to this podcast and to the others has been overwhelming in a lot of ways and very gratifying. So thank you so much for your support. If you'd like to support and you haven't had the opportunity to, it's very helpful for us if you go and review our podcast on whatever podcasting source you use. But especially, I know it helps on iTunes. So if you are, even if you're not an iTunes user like myself, you know, get on there long enough to leave a review for us, ideally a positive one. But the more reviews we get, the more likely it is that our podcast gets on to recommendations, shows up early in searches, that sort of thing. So the more hits we can get on reviews, the more our podcast will get out there. And the more people can join our fun little community. So thank you all for all of your support throughout this year. It's been a blast. And we're looking forward to a whole lot more shenanigans in 2018. So thank you all. I am Philip once again, speaking on behalf of Eric as well. And thank you and good night.